call to order this meeting of the Commerce Committee. A quorum is present. Our first item of business is approval of our minutes from April 25th, 2023. Representative Katisa Watoon, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the April 25th minutes.
Representative Katisa Watoon moves approval of our minutes from April 25th, 2023. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Members, we're having a great meeting today about property and casualty insurance markets and extreme weather events, climate change. But before we get to that, we do have a couple of new faces here that I want to give them a chance to introduce themselves to us. And so we'll start. We have one new member, Representative Schultz. If you want to say who you are, where you represent, and I think the common practice here is, like, the one thing we got to see in your district has been the question that we usually ask.
Wasn't there a song?
Best restaurant, I think.
Best restaurant?
It was
best restaurant. Best restaurant. We'll go with that.
So I'm Representative Isaac Schultz. I represent House District 10B, which is kind of the central portion of the state, the very rural area to the north and to the east of St. Cloud. And I'll just take Representative Cagle's point. All of you, if you're ever headed up north to Cabin Country, you have to travel through Royalton. And in Royalton, you get stuck at the stoplight, and it's an issue you have to work on together to make sure we have the easy flow of traffic. And when you pass through Royalton and have to stop at that stoplight, you see Treasure City. And so we're going to name that as, like, maybe one of the most famous places in my district.
All right. Normally, in this committee, we don't do a lot of hazing of new members because we usually have a lot of them, right? But we only have one, and I feel like that's a special opportunity. So I would definitely encourage members to make Representative Schultz feel welcome in their own manner of choosing. Representative O'Driscoll.
Did he bring treats?
I don't know. Did you bring treats, Representative Schultz?
I did not bring treats today. However, I will note to the committee, this was literally something that I did actively and consciously think about last night, but I didn't want to be outside the culture.
What I understand you say is that you, like, made a deliberate choice to not bring treats.
Exactly.
We'll see what Monday brings.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting. That's worth noting. We also do have a new committee legislative assistant, Mr. Durfee, Morgan Durfee, here to my left, who joins us for the first time this year. Our committee legislative assistant last couple years is now the committee administrator for the Housing and Veterans Committees, Mr. Dockendorf. So with that, we'll move on to our agenda for today, which is a discussion of the status of the property and casualty insurance market in Minnesota. I think a lot of Minnesotans are seeing sizable increases in their premiums, both for their homeowners insurance and for their car insurance. We thought that it'd be good to have a discussion about what's happening and why it's happening, because a lot of what's happening here is climate change and the climate crisis. Extreme weather events, as you will hear today, are more and more common, and they are having big impacts on the premiums that Minnesotans are paying for their insurance. Climate change, people think, is a thing that happens for their kids and grandkids, but it's actually something that you're paying for right now, and you will see that in today's hearing. We do have a couple testifiers today who are appearing by Zoom. I just want to let folks in the audience know these presenters do have PowerPoints that will be visible to committee members on our screens. Unfortunately, just the TV in the corner. You won't be able to see it in the audience, the PowerPoint. It is available on the committee's webpage, the PowerPoints, and we apologize for that. We also don't have committee pages yet, so all testifiers need to sign in at the dais before they speak, with the exception of the two people appearing by Zoom, of course. So with that, we'll move forward with our first testifier, Heidi Roop from the University of Minnesota.
And I'm going to make you a co-host. One second. There, you should be able to share your screen.
Heidi, are you able to hear us?
I think she's frozen. We'll move on to the So I think we'll move on to the department and see if we can get Ms. Roop back on Zoom. So we'll move next to the Department of Commerce and Mr. Brickwitty.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Peter Brickwitty, Assistant Commissioner at the Commerce Department. If you'll just give me a second to get our AV hooked up, hopefully this will work. And then I'll turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Dreyer for our presentation. Remember seeing our PowerPoint.
Yeah,
we are.
Great. Good morning or afternoon. It's afternoon already. Hi, Julia Dreyer.
Muted here. That was not helpful.
Oh, huh? We just in time have resolved the technical issues. So I think if it's okay with you, we'll go with back to our previous arrangement. Start with Dr. Roop from the University of Minnesota. Dr. Roop.
Would you like me to start over?
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
You were frozen.
We just got you back.
Okay, thank you. Well, I apologize for that if that hiccup was on my end. Chair Stevenson and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity and, of course, accommodating a remote testimony this morning while I'm overseas. My name is Dr. Heidi Roop. I'm an extension specialist and assistant professor at the University of Minnesota focused on climate change and its impacts on our state. I've been asked here today to provide an overview of our observed and projected impacts of climate on our state and our economy. In my remarks to follow, you will see many facts and figures. Many of these can feel really abstract, but with every passing day, of course, the abstractions of climate change lessen, and we are left confronting the risk that scientists have long anticipated would arrive. Increasingly, Minnesotans have a personal climate story to tell as we face loss of property, livelihoods, impacts on our health and well-being, impacts to the ecosystems we cherish, and changes in our lifeways and cultural identities. The impacts of climate change, as Chair Stevenson has already mentioned, are not just a far-off future phenomenon, but they're something we're grappling with and coping with today. As you all make critical investments and decisions about the place that we all call home, I hope you'll remember this, that across age groups, geography, political affiliation, and level of education, a significant majority of Minnesotans, in fact, 76% of Minnesotans report being concerned about climate change in our state. Not only are they concerned, but a majority want to see action to reduce emissions, improve access to renewable energy, and prepare for the impacts of climate change by protecting our landscapes and our communities. They want to see local, municipal, and state governments doing more to address this issue. And as the federal government has noted, the fiscal risks of climate change are, quote, immense, with anticipated losses to our national GDP of anywhere between 3 and 10% by this end of the century from climate change impacts alone. Given the time I have today and the penchant for climate scientists to go on and on, I'm going to boil down some key points for you, and I don't have a lot of graphs in this presentation. You may be relieved. I thought I'd boil down some of the key science. The state of the climate science is derived from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the U.S.'s most recent authoritative climate report, the fifth U.S. National Climate Assessment, including information derived from the Midwest chapter on which I'm an author. These authoritative documents synthesize literally hundreds of thousands of scientific studies and are compiled, reviewed, and vetted by hundreds of scientists. This slide boils down thousands of pages of text in some key points. When it comes to climate change, we know that what's causing it is us. We know that climate change is here now. We know that we have committed to a certain amount of change. That is, we've locked in certain changes and impacts on the landscape. We also know the more we continue to produce of greenhouse gases, the worse this problem gets. We know that adaptation or preparing for climate change is an imperative alongside our efforts to reduce emissions. Importantly, the chapters of climate change and the impacts that stem from human-caused climate change are not yet written. We still choose. This next decade is critical for choices we make, yes, to reduce emissions, but also to prepare Minnesota communities, our infrastructure, our economy, our water resources, our natural environment for the impacts of climate change. These are choices that we all need to make together today. 2023 was an exceptional year for many things, including the emergence of a clear climate change signal across the globe, even concurrent with a strong El Nino, which is in part why we've been experiencing such abnormal warmth in Minnesota, that iconically or terrifyingly warm December and our wettest December on record, our warmest December on record last year, were a combination of climate change and the strong El Nino. But 2023, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, was the warmest year since global record keeping began in 1850. And the U.S. experienced 28 individual billion-dollar disasters. These are weather and climate-related disasters where the costs of loss exceed $28 billion. The frequency of such events is increasing alongside the harder-to-track but more numerous events that cost less than $1 billion in damages. Between 1980 and 2023, the average annual number of billion-dollar disasters was 8.5 events. The most recent five-year average puts that count at 20.4 events per year. That's $20.4 billion disasters. Again, the fiscal risks of climate change are immense, as are the risks of displacement and the impacts on key economic sectors in our state, and they pose serious challenges to the insurance and reinsurance industries. And we see in some parts of our nation, people no longer have access to suitable insurance products, in part driven by climate change-related risks. Our state is warming. Our average annual temperature has increased by 3 degrees Fahrenheit since 1895. Those are measurements taken directly on the landscape. And so these are direct observed changes in warming across our state. Our state is warming, but this warmth, of course, is not equally distributed across the state or over the year. Our winters are warming fastest, as indicated by the middle map, which shows the northern reaches of our state experiencing exceptional warmth, particularly in the winters, with warmth occurring at over 7.1 degrees Fahrenheit over our observed record. This is already influencing the things we care about and rely on every day, whether those are roads or bridges or water systems or stormwater infrastructure or the resilience of our own homes. Minnesota is getting warmer and wetter. Our warmest and wettest years on record have all occurred after 1997. We are already measuring a 13% increase in the heaviest rainfall of the year, and our growing season has lengthened by 2 weeks since 1950. This is in part due to that warmth that we already discussed. I will note here a key interest to insurers is wind and convective storms, or call those thunderstorms or hailstorms. These tend to be variables that are very difficult to model with our computer modeling. So I will note here that we are in the process of working with a range of partners, including some of our utilities across the state, to secure federal resources to actually conduct future modeling as it relates to wind and convective storms for the state. So this is science that is hopefully going to be in development soon to even further deepen this conversation. However, we do know that extreme event frequency and intensity are going up and are likely to continue to do so. As an example, often already undersized for the rain events we're already experiencing, much less those we anticipate in the future. And this puts many properties at risk. In fact, in recent years, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has reported an average of 150 times annually where wastewater has overflowed into lakes and streams because of wet weather. This wet weather can also cause sewer overflows and subsequent damages to homes and property, often which go either underreported or not reported at all. And future projections point to greater increases in precipitation. These maps are showing new data that the state helped the University of Minnesota to produce that are just hot off the presses. These are probably the first time these maps have been displayed. And they are showing us average change in springtime precipitation in Minnesota under continued high emissions of greenhouse gases, showing that across the state, as the right panel shows, an increase by over 40% in many parts of the state by the end of the century of just springtime precipitation. This is not just heavy precipitation. This is average seasonal precipitation. And around 15% by mid-century, so around the year 2040. This is well within the usable life of much of our state's infrastructure and investments. But as it stands today, there are few incentives or rules that require upgrades to infrastructure or property or new buildings that account for future climate. This is also something we are working on with the Department of Administration. And many property owners are already underinsured for their true climate risks they face today, much less those they face tomorrow. In fact, 2 out of every 3 American homes are now considered underinsured. In MPCA, current flood risks are estimated to already be impacting around 29,000 miles of roads, 515 critical infrastructure facilities, and more than 155 residential properties at risk of flooding. And more than 50 wastewater treatment plants in Minnesota are at, quote, major to severe risk of significant flooding in the next 3 decades. Yet MPCA also notes that only 6% of these wastewater facilities in Minnesota have a plan in place to adapt to these extremes. As a climate scientist who looks at future risks facing our state, this gives me pause. As we know that proactive approaches to climate risk management bring many benefits to communities and more often bring substantial cost savings than waiting for systems to fail and causing property damage, illness, and loss of access to critical services. The current estimate to upgrade Midwest infrastructure, including our dams, bridges, wastewater, and energy generation and distribution systems, is $7,547,000 per capita across the Midwest. This is not something we can, of course, do overnight. Extreme heat also poses a threat to our state and to our built environment. Extreme heat stresses our infrastructure, our social systems, our health, and our environment. Trends in the region show heat extremes have not yet shown up, contrary to what we all may think when those warm days come, but all model projections indicate that they aren't far away. We have an imperative and an opportunity to prepare. With high emissions of greenhouse gases, I will say this particular plot, these particular maps took the wind out of my own sails as someone who prefers the cold and hence loves living in Minnesota. The number of days exceeding 100 degrees Fahrenheit in the future is expected to increase substantially for the state. This is a future I think many Minnesotans want to avoid. There would be on average about 40 days per summer where the temperatures would be in exceeding 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Extreme heat is an underappreciated impact to insurance and property and casualty losses. Heat paired with drier summers will increase our wildfire risks. And current research is looking at the connection between high heat incidents and claims, including accidents, injuries, and workman's comp. And I'm almost done here. Across the Midwest, we are already moving between extremes more frequently and more quickly. This is what's happening now. So we are experiencing the swings between extremes and those costs and consequences. The last 3 years are a clear demonstration of this in our state, where we've had to cope with floods and droughts feel almost like are occurring overnight between one another. The choice we get to make is very clear. Minnesota's average daily temperature at the end of the century under high emissions is likely to be higher by over 10 degrees Fahrenheit. Whereas if we dial back emissions, that number, still shocking, but not nearly as much, we can limit warming to around 6 to 7.6 degrees Fahrenheit as a statewide average relative to 1995 to 2014. Of course, dialing it even further back yields even less warming, but we are not currently, even with a global stocktake of all global climate commitments, currently on a trajectory for that very low emissions scenario. We have to note that not all Minnesotans experience climate change in the same way. Social, economic, historical, and political factors influence who has the ability to prepare, to cover themselves sufficiently, to cope with, and then, of course, recover from climate change and its impacts. We need to center our solutions and investing and addressing these inequities. And Minnesotans need to have access to cover some of their most valuable assets, their lives, their livelihoods, and their properties. Today, the question is now whether we will be effective climate risk managers. We need to integrate climate thinking and climate risk management into all of our decisions. The state and localities that embrace this are more likely to be the ones to experience less loss, and they can more quickly recover from disaster when it strikes. In the context of insurance and risk, a 2023 Grist article summed it up pretty clearly. Without adequate preparations and engagement with the insurance and reinsurance industries, many Americans may be left to, quote, hold the ashes of their assets. A proactive approach to safeguard Minnesotans and provide safe and healthy housing and infrastructure that can be adequately insured against loss and increasing climate risks is key. Managing these risks is effectively risk management, and we do that by both preparing for the impacts of climate change while preventing them from getting worse. We have to work to prevent this problem together while being proactive in planning and preparing Minnesotans for a climate change future, which in many cases has already arrived. And I'll end with a reminder that was a key point in the U.S.'s fifth national climate assessment, which came out in November of 2023, which noted very clearly that every increment of warming matters and that it causes discernible increases in hot extremes, heavy precipitation, and agricultural and ecological drought. Importantly, communities, farmers, tribes, and industries across our state are looking for practical, place-specific, and durable solutions and protections to support the communities and the thriving economies that we deserve and desire. You are all key enablers of securing this safe and healthy.
Okay. Well, I don't know if Dr. Roop can hear me, but thank you for that sobering testimony. We'll move on to Deputy Commissioner Dreyer and Mr. Brickwitty at this point. And if Dr. Roop can hear me and can stay on in case members have questions later, that would be wonderful. But I don't know if the doctor can even hear me at this point. Deputy Commissioner.
Great. Hi, again. All right. What does commerce do? So one of our visions is that we have a fair and equitable marketplace for Minnesota. And what this means is that we are meeting the needs of all Minnesotans, and in particular meeting the needs of Minnesotans who've been historically disadvantaged by our systems, and that we protect consumers and have businesses that are oriented towards business practices that eliminate unintended consequences for marginalized populations. What this means is not only is this hearing a timely one, but this is really an exciting opportunity for the department to bring its full self to this presentation. Commerce is the only insurance regulator in the country that also houses its state energy offices, and this gives us a very unique and important perspective on the impacts that our changing climate is having on our insurance markets. Insurance companies have long been on the front lines of dealing with the increasingly destructive impacts of climate change, both here in Minnesota and across the country, and here is why. It's a little tough to see on the slide, but at the very bottom of the map, this shows the approximate location of each of the 28 separate billion-dollar weather and climate disasters in the United States in 2023. You'll note the August 11th hailstorm that blew through the Twin Cities is on this map. So that's about 30 minutes of a storm, and it was a billion-dollar weather event. While we may not look quite as bad as Texas, what we're really concerned about is the compounding effect of these storms. So in addition to 2023, 2022 featured three individual billion-dollar events in 1 week in early May. We're seeing this happen year after year, and this is the problem confronting insurance companies and ultimately consumers. As insurance regulators, our job is to maintain a fair and equitable marketplace while maintaining the balance between insurance costs for Minnesotans and insurance companies' financial solvency. So our state-based system of insurance regulation allows us to respond more swiftly and more nimbly to the market conditions. So we can coordinate on best practices with other regulators, with companies. We can be flexible in our approach to state-specific challenges as well. So, for example, many of our smaller regional companies have been experiencing challenges securing reinsurance, and we've been able to react quickly to these companies' ongoing regulatory needs as they make business changes. We view this work as a partnership with the companies, as the worst predicament for consumers is if a company either goes insolvent or decides that they need to leave the market. And we've been able to work with companies and the industry more broadly to avoid that happening here in Minnesota when it has been happening in other states. This slide shows the rate filings for auto and homeowners over the last 10 years. We've seen some rather significant increases in filings from insurers, both overall and as well as for the larger increase amounts that we've seen previously. So the purple line, purplish color line, is a rate increase of 10 to 15%. That red line is 15 to 20, and that blue line is increases over 20%. In the vast majority of cases, those increases are actuarially justified and needed, and they also reflect averages. So people may be seeing increases that exceed this amount. Go to the next slide. We've also seen trends across companies that change coverage amounts or the types of policies. So these changes are really impacting consumers who are faced with potentially paying more for less coverage, but it's also affecting consumers when they have a claim. So this combination of increased volume of filings combined with the nature of the filings, i.e. larger rate increases, the changes to the policies, the complexity of the policies that are being filed are creating a lot of pressure on our collective teams. Complaints of all types are above pre-pandemic levels. Homeowners' complaints were 25% of total complaints received in 2021. It was around 28% in 23. We're hearing from a lot of people that they weren't aware that something in their policy had changed until after they had a claim. We're also hearing about specific types of insurance or specific situations where consumers are having difficulty with their insurers. Homeowners Association policies seem to be a particularly acute market issue, and there aren't necessarily some easy solutions around that because, in general, Commerce does not receive rate filings for those products. We're also hearing that owners of rental properties that add energy resilience upgrades to their properties are being confronted with insurers increasing premiums based on those updates, perhaps not fully taking into effect the mitigation potential of those upgrades to prevent future insurance claims that could result from extended extreme weather events. So the total recoveries for consumers... Yeah, sorry, did you move ahead? Total recoveries for consumers in 23 was about $8.8 million, and almost $6 million of this was related to issues with homeowners' policies. So what are some of the actions that we've taken at Commerce? Commerce was proactive in issuing a consumer alert in August 2022, encouraging Minnesotans to review their insurance policies and work with their agents to understand any recent changes. We continue to reiterate that advice today. Because of the way the PNC or property and casualty insurance is regulated, we have slightly different tools in our regulatory toolbox than we do on the health insurance side. One of these tools that we have is issuing notices of hearing letters to insurers who file proposed rate increases of 25% or more, and we've issued over 60 of those letters since August 2022. These are not designed necessarily to prevent a rate increase that's needed, but really to provide some additional public insight into what is happening and to prevent excessive rate increases. We are particularly grateful for the insurance industry's involvement in the creation of the Strength in Minnesota Home program and are thankful to the legislature as well for the $1 million in planning money that it appropriated to us to establish this program last session. And just a quick reminder that anyone who puts a fortified roof on their home is eligible for a discount on their homeowner's policy. We've also heavily engaged with our colleagues through the National Association of Insurance Commissioners on both regulatory approaches to financial oversight of how insurers are responding to challenges posed by a changing climate, as well as on potential research in this area that can help us calibrate the effectiveness of insurers' use of catastrophic models to better understand the risk assessments. And with that, happy to take any questions.
Great. And we will do questions after we get through all of the testifiers. So we'll move on at this point. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner, to Aaron Cocking and the Insurance Federation, Mr. Cocking. Chair Stevenson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Aaron Cocking, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Welcome back. It's good to see you all again. The Insurance Federation of Minnesota, for those of you that might not know, is a nonprofit state insurance trade association representing insurance companies doing business in Minnesota. We represent companies with many different lines of insurance, including auto, business, commercial, homeowners, renters, and workers' compensation. Chair Stevenson, thank you for holding this hearing at such a critical time, as we've seen from the previous testifiers. The impact of climate on the insurance market, and especially the insurance market in Minnesota, has become clear to almost everyone. Most of all, to those paying insurance premiums. The calls and texts I've received from members of this committee and other legislators this past year regarding the cost of insurance is a good indicator of the importance of this issue. Anyone who's opened their mail recently and found their insurance renewal has probably been surprised at the amount of their new premium. Whether home, auto, or commercial, nearly everyone is seeing the price they pay to protect their property increase. And we're all left asking why. Now, while there are aspects of insurance that are confusing and technical, the basic premise of insurance is incredibly simple.
Insurers collect premiums from all of their policyholders and then pay claims from those collected premiums. Insurance is a product different from any other because, unlike buying a television or buying a computer, the cost of the product is not known until well after it's sold. Now, insurers do their best to anticipate what they might have to pay out in losses each year. They evaluate past losses and look at predictive modeling to help them make their decisions. However, when the losses are higher than expected, insurance companies must raise premiums to cover the cost of the losses. And insurers are paying out significantly more in losses than they're collecting in premiums across the country, but especially here in Minnesota. And much of the biggest losses are being driven by changing weather. Minnesota has faced more frequent storms that are stronger and more severe than we have ever seen before. According to the National Centers for Environmental Information, Minnesota has the second most extreme weather of any state in the nation, trailing only California. In 2023, as I think both of our previous testifiers have said, the U.S. experienced 28 separate weather events that cost at least $1 billion in damages. That is the highest number ever. And that figure includes the happy hour hailstorm that hit the Twin Cities on August 11th of last summer. Now, while we are experiencing more storms that are doing more damage, we are also facing increased costs to fix the damage. The cost of materials and the availability and cost of labor to complete the repairs both contribute to significantly more expensive claims. So what has changed? Let's look at how we arrived here. During the mid to late 1990s, Minnesota's property insurance market was relatively stable. And then one year, it changed. 1998 flipped a weather switch that hasn't been turned off. Total insured losses in Minnesota in 1998 totaled $1.5 billion, which was more than the 40 previous years combined. And behind those losses is unprecedented severe weather. Minnesota experienced more major hail events and tornadoes in 2022 than nearly any other state in the country. We had 387 major hail events in 2022, which is third only to Texas and Nebraska. We had 77 tornadoes, and only the coastal states of Mississippi, Texas, and Alabama had more than Minnesota. And speaking of tornadoes, we're now seeing them at times that we have never heard of before. Minnesota had a December tornado for the first time in 2022. And just last week, we saw a tornado hit across the border in Wisconsin, the first time ever in the month of February. And the connection between weather, insurance losses, and premiums is very clear. In 1998, the average Minnesota homeowner's premium was $368 a year, compared to the national average of $455 a year. How would you like to pay that now, right? By 2021, the average Minnesota's homeowner premium had jumped to just over $1,600 a year, while the national average was right around $1,400 a year. That's more than 430% increase in 22 years. In 1998, Minnesota had the 35th highest premium in the U.S. We're now at 12th. And let me illustrate for you one example of why that's happening. The impact that storms have on homes often involves roof damage. As you can imagine, repair costs have skyrocketed in the last 10 years. In 2013, the average cost of a hail claim was just under $15,000, with the cost of a square of shingles at right around $350. By 2023, the average cost of a hail claim had nearly doubled to $29,400 and $550 per square. So we've identified the problems. So what are the things that we can do this year and beyond to help? Well, first, if anyone has some magical control of the weather and could turn storms off for a year, that would be incredibly helpful to our companies. But next, companies need to be able to charge the adequate rate they need to pay consumers when they have a claim or claims. Remember that rates must be reviewed and approved by each state's insurance regulator. The time it takes for this process can impact the financial modeling insurance companies use to set rates. And this has been a significant hurdle for insurance companies doing business in Minnesota this past 18 months. Now, insurers understand the rate approval process is necessary, but we ask that any way to accelerate the process and increase efficiency becomes a regulatory priority this year. With significant inflationary increases and more storm activity leading to much higher losses, companies need to charge a fair and competitive rate to remain in the market. And you don't have to look too far to see what happens when a state restricts a carrier's ability to charge a fair and justifiable rate. They stop writing insurance policies and they leave the state. California offers a prime and very recent example. They have a law that restricts how much of a rate increase a carrier can apply each year. And they also restricted insurers from being able to use predictive modeling to evaluate what future claims look like. For a state like California that has been hit hard by the climate crisis, companies needed to be able to model and price the impact of wildfires and other catastrophic weather events. With a rash of increased losses and the inability to price according to that risk, several insurers had no choice but to stop writing business in California. Now, this has led some to worry that California is becoming an insurance desert. Chair Stevenson and members, we can't let the same thing happen in Minnesota, especially since less competition leads to higher prices. Now, regulators can sometimes be led into thinking that they're doing consumers a favor by not allowing insurers to charge the fair and justifiable rate they need, but nothing could be further from the truth. As I previously mentioned, companies can decide to stop writing in a state if they can't charge the premium they need to pay losses. Even if they don't withdraw from the market, they must make decisions on coverage and availability that people might not like. Now, Minnesota's insurance law says that rates must be adequate. That means in Minnesota's insurance rates must be sufficient to sustain projected losses and expenses within the state. How long can companies go without their rate requests being approved before their rate can be described as inadequate? Companies should also be able to underwrite and base their rates on weather-related losses. Minnesota is the only state in the nation that prohibits insurers from using multiple weather losses in their underwriting evaluations. This means that your constituents who have never had a weather loss could be paying more than they otherwise would be. And that's because someone with multiple weather claims is paying less than they otherwise would be. Now, we should also expand on the good work done by members of this committee and the legislature last year on the price gouging contractors. I want to thank specifically Attorney General Ellison and his staff for their willingness to evaluate and respond to the cases and claims forwarded to his office showing a violation of the price gouging statute. Now, we're back this year to expand on that statute to include two other groups who are often problematic in this area as well, tree trimmers and fire and restoration companies. Thank you to Representative Tabke for carrying the bill that this year. We're coming back in a few minutes to deal with that. Lastly, as groups come forward this year attempting to convince you that insurance companies should be required to pay out more to them, whatever group they are, remember this all has pressure on premiums. The Insurance Federation of Minnesota wants consumers to have a competitive marketplace where insurance is not only available but also affordable, and we look forward to working with each of you this year to make that a reality. Chair Stevenson, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today, provide some updated information, and I'm happy to answer any questions when we get to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Cocking. Next, we're going to go back onto Zoom here for Paul Martin from the Reinsurance Association of America. Mr. Martin, can you hear me and speak? Can we hear you?
I can, and good afternoon, Chairman and members. My name is Paul Martin. I'm with the Reinsurance Association of America. As I am in the process of sharing my screen, I do want to share just some data that has come forward. One of the things I was going to share, my friend Aaron Cocking has already shared, and that is you saw the story about the tornado, the first ever tornado in February that touched down in Wisconsin. Now, some people may say, well, that's just an aberration that this is something that doesn't happen. And yet we keep seeing data and data and data indicating that climate trends are changing throughout the country. So this week we learned that insured losses for the month of January nationwide have been estimated somewhere between $4.5 and $5.5 billion. The 10-year moving average for the month of January is only $1.5 billion. So we're already 3x over the first month of losses compared to historic trends. And we're just 1 month into the year. Most of those losses came from atmospheric rivers in the West Coast, severe convective storms along the Southeast and the East Coast, as well as some very heavy severe convective storms in Texas. Now, at that point, you may be saying, well, okay, that's fine, but you know, we're in Minnesota. That hasn't happened here. One of the things that we like to stress to policymakers, regulators, and legislators in all 50 states is that every state—
Maybe if you turn off your camera, Mr. Martin.
I'm sorry. Does that help? Are you seeing the PowerPoint?
Well, while we try to restore Mr. Martin, we have one more or two more testifiers that I think are testifying together, Roberta Gibbons and Bill Butler from the Big Eye. Welcome to the committee. Oh. This seems to be the solution. We just invite the next testifier up and causes the...
Can you hear me?
Wait a second here to see if this works.
Paul, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Yeah, I think if you maybe leave your camera off, we might have better luck. And you can stay there if you want, or you can go back to your seat, up to you. Yeah. Go ahead, Mr. Martin.
I cannot hear you.
Nothing. Yeah, I think we were muted there. Can you hear me now, Mr. Martin?
I can now. Are you able to see the PowerPoint?
Yeah, I don't think we're having pretty dramatic. Our apologies to you, sir. We'll certainly
circulate your materials.
This, I think, is not going to work out technologically. So thank you for your willingness to attempt to make this work today, but we're going to have to move along. So we'll go to Ms. Gibbons and Mr. Butler.
Good afternoon, Chair Stevenson and House Commerce Committee members. My name is Roberta Gibbons, and I am a senior account manager for Dicey Williams Agency and have been for over 40 years. And in all of my years, I cannot remember an insurance marketplace like we have today. Many of our customers are concerned with the premium and availability challenges that are facing all of us and do not understand why companies are taking rate increases and or changing policy coverage. Most do not remember that Minnesota has had to weather several significant catastrophic weather events, much like the happy hour hailstorm of August 11th, which resulted in $1.3 billion in insurance claims. As a result of these storms and others like it over the course of the last few years, insurance companies have been forced to increase premiums and or make changes to the coverages that are provided under property insurance policies so that they can continue to pay future claims. The storms that we have encountered, however, are only one part of the problem. Once the property has been damaged by the storm, companies and customers alike have had to deal with the increased costs that follow catastrophic weather events. As an independent insurance agent, I work closely with my customers to find solutions to their insurance needs through writing of insurance products that are provided here in the state of Minnesota. Unfortunately, the number of convective storms that we have had over the course of the last few years has made it a challenge to provide our customers with comprehensive and competitive solutions to protect for what is for many their most important investment, their home. Due to the lack of adequate premiums being charged and the fact that it takes most carriers 18 to 24 months to implement rate changes, many companies have had to take steps to limit their policy base while the rates play catch up to the exposures that the insurance companies are facing. This has led carriers to pulling out of the state altogether, placing moratoriums on new business, or making changes to their eligibility guidelines so that they are restricting some of the business that is written. This lack of availability has made it difficult and in some cases impossible for us as trusted agents to help our customers secure or in some cases keep their insurance coverage. Some of the challenges that my customers face on a daily basis are not being able to get quotations for homes that have roofs over 10 years old. Customers have challenges if they've experienced a claim in the past. Customers who have trees or brush that are in contact with their home. Customers who are unable to obtain coverage for rental properties or any other out of the ordinary exposures that they might have. These are just a few of the examples of what we see on a daily basis. And unless we can envelop the state in a protective bubble to protect our homes, automobiles, and businesses from future damage, we could see additional restrictions to availability and additional premium increases. Property owners can do their share to mitigate some of these issues, replacing older roofs, carrying higher deductibles, clearing brush or other shrubbery away from their premises are some of the ways that they can do this. We also recommend having a conversation with their insurance agent to make sure that they're getting all of the credits that they have available to them and to carry higher deductibles. Chairman Stevenson and committee, I thank you. And I will turn it over to my associate, Bill Butler.
Chair Stevenson and members, for the record, my name is Bill Butler. I'm an owner and president of Butler & Associates Insurance Agency in Apple Valley, Minnesota. April will be my 20th year in the insurance industry as a licensed agent selling personal and commercial insurance products. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss the significant issue of climate change, severe convective storms, and the escalating claim costs. We understand that severe weather events, as we've heard today, are beyond our control. However, what we can control is the aftermath, particularly the cost of claims resulting from these severe storms. In Minnesota, agents like us have seen a troubling rise in the activity of so-called storm-chasing contractors. They often approach homeowners with offers that seem too good to refuse, like cash, gifts, trips, for referring friends and neighbors. While $250, twins tickets, or a trip to Mexico may seem inconsequential of the billion-dollar storms that we heard about today, it is death by a thousand cuts to our insurance carrier partners. Big doors swing on little hinges. Storm chasers that offer referral fees in many cases also have extreme contract language affecting the homeowner's ability to negotiate with their own insurance company, and it affects our ability as independent insurance agents to assist our clients in navigating the claims process. I have a personal client story I'd like to highlight this issue. After a recent major claim, a neighbor introduced a contractor to my client to get his roof inspected. Before the contractor got onto the roof, he said, "I need to get some paperwork signed to get started," and then proceeded to set up his ladders. Meanwhile, the neighbor started talking about how good the contractor was and showing five-star Google reviews of their work, so my client signed that paperwork without really reading any of it. After a quick inspection and without providing an estimate, the contractor confirmed that there was indeed hail damage and advised my client to file a claim, which he did. My client started to worry about being able to afford his deductible, and the contractor offered a $250 referral fee for each neighbor my client recruited, just like his neighbor had done for referring him, suggesting to my client that that could offset his deductible. Moreover, the contract has a punitive clause. If my client did not use that contractor after the claim was approved by his insurance company, he would owe 25% of the claim payout by his insurance carrier to that contractor as a contract termination penalty. My client then called me asking for assistance, and I could offer none because the claim had been filed and a contract had been signed. I have your examples of these types of cash, gifts, and trips, referral rewards that contractors are using to entice clients to refer friends and family for storm-related damage, and specifically insurance claims. A simple Google search turned up example after example in only a few minutes of searching. It is important to note that this behavior is already addressed in 2018. A commendable effort was made by the builders to police their industry, resulting in a law prohibiting inducements involving insurance claims. However, the current law, Minnesota Statute 325E.66, is not effectively curbing these practices. So we are working on legislation that will strengthen the existing law, and by doing so, we can protect homeowners and ensure that insurance costs are reflecting the true cost of claims, not inflated by inducements, gifts, or cash rewards, and are planning to sit down with the builders to further address these critical issues. And a last thought about roof replacements as it relates to climate and the environment. Modern roofs are generally more sustainable and resilient, but increasingly are being replaced by homeowners as part of insurance claims and storm damage. And these roofs, with years and years of life, are winding up in landfills. Thank you for your time and attention in this critical matter. Our association of over 6,000 agents in Minnesota are committed to helping this committee and Minnesota insurance consumers weather the storm. I will take questions as well.
Thank you very much. And we will now move to member discussion and questions as to the issues raised here. Unfortunately, as people have seen, our Zoom technology has failed us, so we don't have the ability to ask in real time questions of Dr. Roop. And Mr. Martin, but if members do have questions, we can get them to those testifiers via email. Mr. Brown would be happy to assist with that. So questions from the committee for or discussion from the committee as to this. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a comment and some question and a question or two. So first of all, Mr. Chair, thank you for having this really important hearing. I was at another committee meeting this morning when I heard a complaint of discussing climate in it because the name of the committee didn't have climate in the committee name. And what we see here and what we see all around is that climate change impacts virtually every issue and impacts virtually every committee. So thank you for this important hearing. I want to ask about, there was a comment I think made by Commerce about people making upgrades to their homes that can potentially reduce costs in the future, adaptation related things that aren't being taken into account or could be taken into account in a different way by insurers. I wanted to probe that a little bit.
Mr. Brickwitty.
Make sure I heard that right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kraft, yeah, anecdotal, but we have gotten an uptick in complaints into our consumer services center from owners of rental properties who have decided to put, for example, solar panels on the roof of that rental property. And then at renewal time, having difficulty with their insurer, either with large price increases or a decision on the part of the insurer to non-renew, and citing the solar panels or a different type of renewable energy upgrade system as part of the basis for that non-renewal. That's something that we're interested in also learning more about. Again, I don't know if that's widespread. It's something that we have seen as a trend in complaints into our consumer services center.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be interested in getting maybe Mr. Cocking to comment on that, if that's a reasonable approach or a...
He's coming down, so I'm sure Mr. Cocking can.
And as Mr. Cocking's coming down, Representative Kraft, too, I think
Mr. Brickwitty.
Our point in our presentation was that the potential for adaptation and the resiliency that those types of installations can have for the residents of the homes actually could represent a significant reduction in insurance risk for an insurer. And so I think we would be interested in kind of understanding more how the companies are evaluating that from sort of a catastrophe modeling standpoint and also from an actuarial standpoint.
Yeah, Mr. Chair Stevenson, Representative Kraft. The first I heard about this was when I spoke with Mr. Brickwitty last night. It's certainly something we're interested in. Nothing kind of intuitively to me jumped off as far as why that would necessarily be the case. And so something that we're interested in as well, because from a risk standpoint, I mean, I was trying to go through it as we were talking on the phone. Nothing jumped out at me. And so it was something that we want to look at, but I only heard about that last night. So,
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so I'd be interested in following up on this because there seems to be you have an interest in doing things that can lower premiums and adaptation. It seems like we're hearing that there seems to be maybe a way of working this. So I'd appreciate following up on that with both of you.
Representative Katisa-Watoon.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, and thank you to the testifiers who have helped shed a little bit of light on this issue. I've heard from a number of my constituents, particularly those in homeowners associations, and you know, as development continues across the state and in particularly some of our districts, it's harder and harder to find housing that isn't within the confines of a homeowners association. One particular group of my constituents has had their insurer leave the market. It was a Wisconsin-based company, Acuity Insurance, coincidentally headquartered in my hometown of Sheboygan, Wisconsin. So I have many friends that work for them, actually. But so they left the market. They were dealing with a claim from a previous year, and so they're struggling now, having to find like an emergency provider because Acuity was not going to be providing coverage for their association moving into 2024. So I think I have two questions. I think my question is just kind of twofold. I know one of the commissioners had mentioned that HOAs don't always have to submit their rate increase requests or notifications to the Commerce Department. Is that something as simple as the legislature passing a law requiring that HOAs need to do that, or insurance companies have to cover, submit it? And then are there any time frame requirements for quotes for companies who are providing that, knowing that a homeowners association might be getting just left in the lurch, and then they have to make a faster decision based on not having coverage into the next year?
Why don't we start with Mr. Brickwoody on that one?
Mr. Chair, Representative, excellent questions. So homeowners associations are typically commercial policies, which are under Minnesota rule exempt from filing and have been for the better part of my lifetime. So to your specific question about what it, you know, legislative activity, it is currently prohibited by rule 2700.2470 if you're interested in looking at it. I think to your second question about sort of timelines and notification and the discussion, I think we have had, we said in our presentation, a very significant uptake in complaints to the agency about what's happening in homeowners association filings. And I think it's a complex one because you have, on the one hand, the associations themselves who are working with oftentimes a property management company, usually with a broker, either their own broker or one that works with the property management company. And there are decisions, business decisions, that insurance companies are deciding about whether or not they want to continue to insure property or not. Those commercial policies don't have, those homeowners associations typically don't have access to the insurer of last resort because they're commercial policies. And so you may be looking at a surplus line or a different kind of non-admitted carrier issued product that is not subject to state regulatory review. That's why I think in many cases practically that translates into significant cost increases for the association, and the association then has to make decisions about how they deal with those cost increases amongst the association members. I would also say that we've also heard from a number of agents talking about that it puts individual residents of a homeowners association in a very difficult position to understand how they may buy their own insurance for their own property needs. Because there's oftentimes disputes about actually seeing what's in the master commercial policy, and then it's difficult to understand how the individual might be able to make their own choices about, you know, I might want to buy something specifically to make sure I'm made whole. So it is a very complex situation. It is a tenuous market, and I think the circumstances that you described, and I'm sure Mr. Cocking would agree, of companies leaving the market and leaving homeowners associations in very difficult positions with limited choices is exactly the kind of scenario that we would all like to avoid going forward.
Representative Dotson. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Cassis, did you have a follow-up?
Chair Stevenson, I'm not sure if Mr. Cocking wanted to.
Yeah, Mr. Cocking, did you want to speak anything to that?
Just briefly, Chair Stevenson, Representative Cassis, I would echo Mr. Brickwoody's statements about kind of the complexity of homeowners association policies. I think the fact that you see so few of them left is kind of indicative of the problem that we're talking about today, which is the risk exposure that those companies face for roofs and siding, especially external parts of a structure, that we're just paying out enough that the companies have just said it's not worth it. We can't collect enough in premium for the losses that we're paying. We had a really bad decision in our industry's view on color matching in 2012, a case, Cedar Bluff Townhomes, which forced carriers into matching on siding, and even when you've got, you know, very limited actual physical damage. And so those things, as you know, put upward pressure on premiums, and carriers eventually make the decision that it's just, yeah, they can't make a go of it in this market.
Representative Cattisa-Bouton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Cocking. I just have one quick follow-up. In this particular circumstance, and I'm guessing in some of the others as well, they had kind of they're not even sure who kind of came out and did the assessment on the property to see what the estimated value was. And my constituents, at least, were not sure who they could turn to maybe basically reject that estimation or assessment, and if they could qualify for a secondary assessment, either with the company who provided the quote or even through the Commerce Department. So I just want to make sure that Minnesota consumers have that information, and if it's something that's available through the department, or if it's within their rights to request a secondary assessment for that through the company, where to send them.
I think Chair Stevenson, Representative Katiza Witum, I think in those circumstances, that's more of an HOA issue, because I think the policy is with the HOA. And so if the HOA takes it on and says we're buying into that assessment, their issue is going to be because the individual dwelling or the unit owner is not the insured in that regard. And so they would have to take that up, at least the way that I look at it, through their HOA.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Representative Dodson.
Thank you. I've got a question both for Commerce and Mr. Cocking as well. We look at population count. Does that have a twofold question? Population count in the affected area has been maybe a factor in regards to this, as well as inflation. I guess you look back 10 years ago, 5 years ago, sheet of plywood was $12. Now it's, good golly, I don't even know what it's at now, 25 to 60, depends on which week you get it. How does that affect the industry?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Mr. Chair, Representative, great questions. I think, and a shame that Professor Roop isn't available, because she may have also thoughts on this issue too. I think part of what we have seen, and the Insurance Federation has tremendous data going back to, as you were saying, 1998 sort of being the inflection point, we are seeing the impact of these storms and the cost of these storms or these weather events occurring in part because we have more built area than we used to over time. So that is a consideration, that interaction between a storm and a built environment. Now, a storm like the one on August 11th, I was sitting on a plane on the tarmac at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. We took off, and the pilot said, everybody behind us is at a ground stop. So that storm would have been the same in 1984. It would have bought a lot of roofs in 1984 the same way it bought a lot of roofs this past August. I think inflationary pressures are a contributing factor into some of the costs that we're seeing to repair and recover. But I think that's also why Professor Roop's slide about that resiliency gap is so important, that we're doing as everything we can to help people adapt and prevent claims from occurring in the first place. That's part of the mission from the Strengthen Minnesota Homes program that we were involved in last year and that we're building out now. But also to try to do what we can to reduce the impacts of climate change at a more macro level to reduce their impacts overall. I think we have to do both of those things. It's not one or the other, because those inflationary pressures, they will be what they are. We have to make sure that people have the ability to stay in their homes, stay healthy, stay safe in the event of these storms that are impacting our daily lives more frequently.
Now, Mr. Cocking, if you have a brief comment to add to that.
No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, especially on the inflationary stuff. I mean, there's no doubt that materials, labor have all become significantly more expensive. We see that as the statistic I mentioned over the last 10 years, I mean, the doubling of the cost of a hailstorm on a roof has definitely applied upward pressure on premiums.
Follow-up question for Mr. Cocking. Color match. I think that's been a factor with the matching colors. Has some of that been caused by maybe mandates have been passed by legislation that have affected you?
Mr. Cock.
Chair Stevenson and Representative Dotseth, the color matching decision was a Supreme Court decision. So there's some regulatory stuff that plays into it with the courts, with the legislature. But a lot of this is trying to find a way to kind of refigure what consumers expect. I mean, everybody assumes, I tell people, like, nobody here budgets, I mean, for the fact that you're going to have to replace your roof. Everybody assumes that in the course or duration of their having a home, that at some point in those 30 years, it's going to hail, and their insurance company is going to pay for it, and everybody expects that. So when that time comes, it's like, well, I'm going to file a claim and, color match. Yeah, I want my whole roof replaced because I don't want to have to deal with it again. And until we can find a way to get consumers to have a little bit more skin in the game on, you know, what when it comes claim time, it's going to be hard to bring any of that down.
One more final question. I'll just give a story. Say you've got a gentleman, I'll just say his name is Ron. He has damage in his basement with flooding of oak floors that he's got in the basement that was built in the 90s. What does an insurance company look like as far as matching the same flooring? If Ron has certain flooring that he wants to match up, are you required then to actually follow through and match that product?
Mr. Cocking.
Boy, you're getting into contract terms now. That I would say it depends. And generally speaking, and again, just very broadly, they're gonna try to match at least some congruity between rooms and where those separation points and where those demarcation points come in. It all depends. I know that's kind of not a good answer, but it just depends.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Brickwin.
I would posit to you, Representative, that that Ron may not know whether or not that claim is going to be covered when it's filed, because it will depend in part on how the water got in to ruin the oak floors in the first place. And that question, I think, is really an important one, because what we have seen over the last several years, as companies have made changes to policies and coverages, is consumers do need to understand those changes before they have a claim. Because that's the most frustrating experience, I think, for anyone. When you have a dispute with your insurance company, and you come to the Commerce Department, and you may not have realized that something has changed in your renewal, which could have happened 6 months ago. And that's such an important point, and agents play such an important role in helping consumers understand what is in their policy. And you really may not, you may have a situation where in some circumstances that could be covered, some circumstances it may not be covered. You may also be able to, with the help of your agent, identify that you may not have enough coverage to match it exactly the way that you want, and you may make a decision to increase your coverage so that you save money on that repair on the back end in the event that you do have a claim.
Okay, we're going to go for about 5 more minutes on this, and then we're going to move to Representative Tabke's bill. Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. That perfect segue into what my question was is that when there are changes in policies, like I had heard just a month ago or so from local insurance agents about the now no longer insuring roofs after they're 10 years or older and that kind of thing. What sort of disclosures are required for consumer protection in order to make sure that people know that that is happening? And are there any changes that need to be made there to make sure that people understand that, like the situation you were just talking about, is that something that people will know about, or it all depends on the agent or how that works?
Mr. Brickwood.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tabke, really great question, and I think probably an answer that my colleagues, both from the Federation and also from the agents, would probably have insightful thoughts on as well. To a certain extent, you know, we need people to read their policies and understand what those changes are. But I do think that the looking at what disclosures are required and when and those time frames is something that would be, I think, of interest in the public interest, because everything we can do to help people understand what their coverage is, what that would cover in specific situations, is helpful. It's much easier to have those kinds of conversations with your insurer and your agent before you have a claim than it is while you have a claim in process after a severe weather event. I think we have seen a variety of complex changes in those filings. Deputy Commissioner Dreyer highlighted some of the trends that we have seen and would be happy to talk in more detail there. I will note the average time for us to review a filing in 2023 was 40 days. So we are moving through them as quickly as we can. If to the extent something takes more than the average, it's typically because we're seeing something complex, either in the contractual terms or on the actuarial side, and or we didn't receive all the information to have a complete filing on the front end of that process. So that number, you know, 40 days is still 40 days, but it's not 6 months, it's not a year. We do try to move through those as quickly as possible for consumers and companies.
Yeah, Chair Stevenson, Representative Tabke, the notion of disclosures, right? We want people to know what they have. I mean, without a doubt. I think as you look back on what the legislature has mandated over disclosures in the past, you get the point if most people, their insurance comes and they pull out their deck sheet and the rest of it either goes in a filing cabinet or goes in the trash. People want to know how much and the only time they interact or have questions is at renewal time on how much it's going to cost or at claims time. And the notion of, again, getting consumers to the point that they know what their coverage is and what they have and what's changed, any ideas on how to get them more involved or more educated, we would be fully supportive of, because I think it knocks down on some of the complaints that go to the department is people that just don't know. But largely it's because those people don't care at the time that it comes. And so to get people to know and to know this is the change and this is the coverage, that stuff all goes out. People just don't have the bandwidth to care about it because it's not right here at that time, which is unfortunate.
And Mr. Chair, one last point that I would make. We spent a lot of time today talking, I think, sort of in the context of a single-family home resident. Your question, I think, becomes an even more important and complex one to answer in the context of renters or people who are living in homeowners associations, because then you're talking about an interaction between not only your individual insurance coverage, but also potentially your landlord's coverage, homeowners association coverage. So it's something to lose sight of, that there are equity considerations that permeate across the marketplace, depending on whether or not you're living in a single-family home or a multifamily residence.
We have three more members on the list, so let's and want to go for, like I said, just a few more minutes. So let's all try to be mindful of that. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate the conversation today. And my question is really about that disclosure piece, right? We have so many older Minnesotans who are moving away from single-family residents into homeowners associations. And while they are on fixed income, the increased premium for their insurance is something that's really causing them to question whether or not they can even stay in their homeowner association. So I'm wondering, as legislators, when we're thinking about what that disclosure might look like, would that disclosure be in the insurance market, or would that disclosure be in the real estate market so that they would know before they purchase? So I'm just curious about your thoughts there.
Mr. Brickwood, or Mr. whoever.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think great questions, and I think as the state's real estate regulator as well, too, I think an interesting question to pose to our friends at the Realtors Association. I think there's probably no one single answer. I think helping people understand what sort of scenario-based circumstances they may encounter is the best way to approach it. Now, if that's with a realtor, if that's with an agent, if that's with both, if that's with your homeowners association directly, I think that's important. Homeowners associations are challenging. It's not a regulated space.
Right.
We get a lot of complaints. I know the Attorney General's office gets a lot of complaints. It is hard for individual members of a homeowners association to get information because, as Mr. Cocking said, the client in that situation is actually the association. So there's a complex set of circumstances. Disputes with your neighbors can also, be a factor in that. So I don't think there's one single answer to your question.
Yeah, Chair Stevenson, Representative Cleavorn, I would echo that. I think a lot of this lies with the homeowners association. I think making sure that they're able to disclose to their residents changes and things that might be impacting them, because, again, they need to be able to make those decisions before a loss occurs. We're all kind of in a better state of mind rather than, something happens and suddenly it's like, oh, my gosh, am I going to be able to afford this? And I think, the homeowners associations or those people that live in those common interest communities, knowing that, I think, is important. And I think that's on the homeowners association.
Thank you.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dotseth asked a good question before that I want to clarify and make sure I understand. This was about the cost increase due to climate change over the past, since I think from 98 to 2021. So I did a quick look, and it looked like inflation from then has gone up from, $1 to 1.89. So roughly then we would expect that 368 to be something around $700 just from an inflation perspective. And let me just finish, then you can respond. So then how do we get from 700 to over 1,600? And the question you often hear is, well, we've had more development, right? So there's more people out there. But wouldn't that be captured in the fact that you're also selling more policies? So you're spreading that anyway. So that increase of around, less than 700 to over 1,600, that's all weather stuff. That's all this crazy weather. Am I right?
Mr. Cocking.
Chair Stevenson, Representative Kraft, yeah, I don't think you're going to get, the notion of more policies and the whole notion that insurance is based on the large law of large numbers, you have more people paying in. If I misrepresented that inflation was to blame for all of that, that wasn't my intention. Weather is and climate is clearly the driving force, because we're paying out more frequently for these more severe storms. And in insurance parlance, frequency and severity are the two key drivers, and we've seen more frequency and higher severity.
Thank you.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the beginning of the at the beginning of the hearing, I was wondering if we were going to be moving to broadband with the connection issues we had, but it's not that here.
Next today. Week. Next week.
Very good. Very good. I just want to underscore what I heard today. High density, as Representative Katizawatoon said, putting more people in a smaller area, you're going to have more potential for losses. Look at University Avenue where the light rail went in. All of that housing that is on there that has replaced other property on there. So when you put more people in a smaller place, you're absolutely going to have larger localized damage in that area if it gets hit. Part of the problem as well is we're allowing people, as Mr. Brickwood, he said, to build in areas that are flood-prone areas that otherwise would not have made sense. And he's talking about the potential for groundwater, when whether is that claim covered or not? Is it groundwater or not? And I also think that the supply chain issues that we've been experiencing and availability of labor has an impact on things here as well. So it's a multi-prong issue. It's not just climate that's driving all of this. There are many other contributors to this. Finally, I just have a quick question for Mr. Brickwoody. Mr. Brickwoody, of the 60 letters that you sent out for rate hearings, how many of those actually resulted in hearings?
Mr. Brickwoody?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, at present, I do not believe we have held a hearing.
Representative Driscoll.
Nope, that's all I had. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and thank you to very, very, very briefly, Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you. I was looking at my neighbors who all had their roofs replaced, and the quality of the roofs that went on, oh, my gosh, right? Very disturbing. Is there a procedure in place or insurance companies that to go out and review what was they actually paid for?
Mr. Cockney, if you have a brief answer really to that question. Brief. We really do need to get to the
Chair Stevenson, Representative Cleaborn, I mean, from our standpoint, we'd like to see people put on, I mean, you know, they would have some skin in this game, but like hail resist, like if we can move to the point where you get people to buy into hail resistant shingles, like that's expensive, and it's expensive for people, and that's not insurance coverage, but that is going to help long term, and I get that that's a challenge, but a lot of times it's, you know, you get paid for your loss, you pick, they select a contractor, and that gets paid. So, yeah.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. We will now take up Representative Tabke's bill as he moves forward. I'll just note, you know, I think we've had a great discussion today on this issue. It's an issue that I hope to return to with other legislation throughout the year. We heard some comments today about referrals, for example, and some comments about deductibles. I think there is more work that we can do on this. There's obviously great work that can be done in other committees. I'd like to represent Kraft's comment that climate affects every committee, and I think it's something that we'll have to be looking at across the board. This bill from Representative Tabke, I think, is a good bill, and I think it's a great Mr. Butler had a great comment about big doors moving on small hinges, and I think this is a good piece of the puzzle. Representative Tabke, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3526 to the General Register.
Representative Tabke moves House File 3526 to be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Let's try and get these amendments done quick, and then you can describe the bill. I think you have an author's amendment, the A2. Do you want to move the A2?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move the A2. It's a technical amendment that we have added some definitions and making sure that everything is very clear for everybody.
Representative Tabke moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A2 is adopted. Representative Niska, do you want to offer the A1 amendment?
Yes, thank you, Chair Stevenson. And the A1 amendment also is, I think, just a technical amendment trying to make sure that the intent of the bill and the intent of 325E.80, as we passed last year, is fully realized in terms of making sure this is in the Attorney General's bailiwick and not in the, that there's not a private right of action. So I was looking at it, putting on my plaintiff's lawyer hat. I was kind of thinking about how you could still find a way around that language. And so this is just adding in some clarification that there's nothing in 325 or 8.31 subdivision 3A that would also provide a private right of action.
Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Niska. I look at this as a friendly amendment and prefer its adoption.
Further discussion to the A1. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A1 is adopted. Representative Tabke, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So to the bill as amended, what this does today is it works on price gouging, and it expands on the work that was done last year by Chair Stevenson and the committee on price gouging. So what we do is we are adding in tree trimming and other services from restoration and mitigation companies to the price gouging statute. And so this is eliminating the folks, working to eliminate the folks that have extremely high prices that make sure that those impact to make sure that we are reducing the impact that those have on everyone. And so we are looking for ways to address rising premiums, and this bill is a small step that we have to achieve that end goal. So I just would turn it over to Mr. Cocking for additional references as to why this is important.
Mr. Cocking. Chair Stevenson, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill so early in the 2024 session. Again, for the record, my name is Aaron Cocking, President and CEO of the Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Well, as we have just discussed in detail, the cost of insurance is rising significantly. This bill will help to reduce the costs of some claims that homeowners and insurers face following severe storms. As Representative Tapke mentioned, we are looking to build on the work of this committee from last year when you addressed price gouging contractors. Last year's bill said that when there is a severe thunderstorm, a residential building contractor can't charge an unconscionably excessive price for labor in comparison to the market price, nor can a contractor charge an insurance company a rate that exceeds what they would otherwise charge a member of the general public. So the bill before you today would add tree trimmers and restoration mitigation companies to that list, prohibiting them from taking advantage of insurers in the same way that contractors were before the passage of last year's legislation. I want to thank the Attorney General's office for their work on this issue since last year's law went into effect. They have responded when companies have forwarded price gouging claims to them, sending letters to the contractors who have violated this statute. And their efforts are one of the reasons we have returned to enhance this law today. We need to make sure that these companies are not gouging insurers, because in times where you need a water restoration company, you don't have the luxury of getting multiple estimates. And I know that from personal experience. A few years ago, we had a pipe burst in our home, and as the water's pouring out of the ceiling, my only thought was, who is the first company that can come out here and start cleaning this up? I didn't consider calling multiple restoration companies to ask for their best price. I called the first one that came to my mind and said, how fast can you get here? And I know that I'm not alone on this, which is why we need to ensure that these companies are acting in a fair manner. Well, let me show you a couple of examples of companies that we would consider not acting in a fair manner. Here's an example of a tree that has been blown down and is resting on this structure. Now, most standard insurance policies allow for $500 per tree for debris removal, plus the cost to remove it from the insured structure. Insurance company received a bill from a tree service in southern Minnesota. It included the $500 debris removal cost and then almost $9,000 to remove this tree from that structure. This charge included a line item for a storm damage climber and emergency hazard removal. Now, here's an example from a water restoration company. A water line to a water softener, which is clean water, broke, causing water to run into the finished basement of a home. The home was a pretty standard dwelling, about 2,000 square feet in total, plus the basement. The water mitigation company charged over $77,000 for the water mitigation in the basement, and that did not include any of the cost to actually repair the damage. That was about 20% of the total value of the home. Some of the high-level issues with that mitigation bill included the mitigation company was charging for fans, dehumidifiers, and thermal air movers, which is normal, but they did that for 16 days. A typical dryout takes 3 to 4 days. Additionally, this company billed for water extraction and demolition of Category 3 water, which is generally contaminated water associated with sewage. A pipe leading to a water softener is clean water and should have been billed at Category 1. Higher-priced equipment was chosen in the estimate when lower-priced equipment was used. More dehumidifiers and equipment were used than needed based on industry guidance, square footage. The competitive bid received from another local mitigation contractor was $37,000, almost $40,000 less. A consultant in the field wrote an estimate for $36,900. Now, when confronted with this, the mitigation contractor revised their bill and submitted it with a $10,000 reduction. And one final example, there was a relatively large tree that fell on a home during a windstorm at night. Now, while the tree was large and the timing was after hours, a nearly $70,000 tree removal invoice was pretty unexpected. In this claim, the bill included the use of two cranes, one with a line item charge of $20,000 and one with a line item of $6,500. A bucket truck was charged at $2,500 for 1 day, a skid steer for 2 days at $2,350. Crew members were billed for 24 hours at $337 per hour. An additional 56 hours was billed at $225. Now, I'm sure we can all agree that, you know, stump grinders and skid steer operators are not taking home $450,000 to $650,000 per year. So as I said at the outset, this price gouging hurts consumers in the form of higher premium. These few examples offer only a snapshot of what insurers see frequently. The bill today helps address this by holding tree trimmers and restoration mitigation companies accountable. I want to thank you to Representative Tapke for chief authoring this. We'll look for your support and happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cocking. Are there any members of the public wishing to testify as to this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion and questions. Mr. Cocking, can you just briefly speak? I know you and I have talked about the Attorney General's enforcement of the price gouging statute that we passed last year for storm chasers. Can you speak to what your industry's experience has been with that?
Yeah. Chair Stevenson, thank you for the question. When we passed the bill last year, when you guys passed the bill last year, towards the end, there was a private right of action included, and, you know, it moved to the point where the enforcement authority rested with the Attorney General. And we had a little bit of question as far as, you know, what that was going to look like. You're going to take this. When the bill went into effect August 1st and these claims started coming in, companies began forwarding these claims to the Attorney General's office, and the Attorney General picked up on them and was sending letters, and we were seeing good work and actual change on the part of the contractors as a result of the Attorney General's work. And so we have found this to be incredibly effective. And I think that's an important point to note, too, on some who might question, like, well, we're going to put these tree trimmers, these restoration companies, in an awkward place. The due process that exists in the fact that the Attorney General is still doing the investigation and enforcement on this provides due process if those companies want to justify their $70,000 tree removal for a single tree.
Further discussion to the bill? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers and Representative Tapke. I realize this is a, you know, brand new section of statute, and this committee worked heavily on this. I just wanted to ask, since it went into effect, have we seen any unintended consequences, just this underlying language, which should give us pause, past experiences, whether with the AG's office or with the Department of Commerce?
Mr. Cocking.
Chair Stevenson, Representative Schultz, from our standpoint, no, but I would be, I don't want to convey to you that I would represent everybody who might have had been impacted by this in some way, shape, or form.
We're about to hit the 2:30 mark, which is when we're supposed to end. There's some people who need to come and take the Zoom equipment, so when they need to do that, they should feel free to come down and do that. I think we're about to wrap up anyway. But Representative Perryman.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Very brief. I think it's a great bill. I signed on it as soon as I saw it. It is great. So thank you, Representative Tapke. It's going to do so much for all Minnesotans in a time, too, that they're already feeling stress and a sense of urgency to find that repair person, and will grab anyone that will listen. So it really will do great things for us to protect consumers, protect our insurance providers from the bad actors that we've already heard about. And just one thing, it will help me with a husband who likes to do everything himself to save money. And so thank you for this, because I can prove to him that we've got a bill that he doesn't have to do that anymore. Thank you.
Oh, very good. Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, Representative Perryman, for your support of this bill. And I just appreciate everyone the yes vote and move this forward.
All right. Representative Tapke renews his motion that House File 3526, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The House File 3526, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the general register. Representative O'Driscoll.
Roadmap for next week, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll, next week we will have hearings on both Monday and Wednesday. We will hear bills on both days. We will be taking up some telecom bills on Monday, as well as probably a couple liquor bills. Wednesday's agenda is still in the works.
Any changes from what you and I have spoken about?
No.
Very good.
Seeing nothing further, the meeting is adjourned.